And we're holding on page Lamed Tes in Ksubos Ois Lamed.
Test level.
Page Lamed Tes Ois Lamed, yes. Okay, so as we started learning about yesterday, the subject of this perek is various things that would affect the shalom bayis, or otherwise the relationship between the husband and the wife. There can be where he subjects her to various nidarim and how long she has to put up with it before it's grounds for divorce. The other way around, if she makes nidarim, as we're going to talk about later. So the Mishnah mentioned not just Nedarim, but other kinds of things, other kinds of restrictions that he might put on her. So the Mishnah men describes a case where the husband says to his, where the husband forbids his wife from going to a Beis HaOvel, to be Menachem Ovel, her friends, or relatives, or to go to or to go to a Beis HaMishteh, to a Simcha, to a family or friend's Simcha. So the Gemara points out, Tanya, now, the problem with that is, the next piece over here, that it impinges on their marriage. It makes it that, as we're going to say, that with that kind of thing, it's going to mean, therefore, that it's going to eventually, it's going to bounce back on her. If she doesn't go to such things, then it's going to end up bouncing back on her. And therefore, it's a valid thing for her to be able to say, and based in, look, if my husband is going to treat me this way, then I can't stay married to him. So the Gemara says, Tanya Hoyer of Meir Omer, my dichtiv, what does it mean in the Pasuk, Toiv lalachas el beis evil, milachas el beis mishta, better to go to the house of an oval than to the than to a party, ba'asher hu soif kol ha'adam, because death is, after all, the eventual end of every person, v'ha'chai yitin el libay, and the living will take it to heart. We're all familiar with the expression, ha'chai yitin el libay, that I've mentioned it probably thousands of times in the years after Rebbetzin Chaim Mushka passed away. Anyway, my v'ha'chai yitin el libay, specifically, what is that? What is the living supposed to take to heart from going to a Beis HaOvel? So it means Dvarim Shel Misa. A person has to consider, a person has to realize for himself the matter of that eventually he's going to be in the same situation himself. So in other words, he shouldn't feel, Rashi says, in other words, he shouldn't feel bad, that he shouldn't feel it's a waste of time, let's say, to go to be Menachem Oval others, because he should realize, and to go attend people's levayas or whatever, because he should realize eventually he's going to be in that same situation himself. De Yisped, somebody who cries and mourns for somebody else, Yispedune, eventually they will do the same thing for him. So in other words, by him doing it for other people, that helps him remember his own Yom HaMisa, and to realize that that's where he's going to end up as well, and that other people, he wants people to give him that covered as well, so he should be doing it for others. Diyakber, somebody who helps bury others, Yakberune, then he will be buried. In other words, if not, the Eved can always arrange. Unfortunately, as we know, it happens sometimes that there's nothing to be found or whatever. Diyodal, somebody who lifts up, Rashi explains, he lifts up his voice in crying and in mourning, Yadlune, then eventually people will lift up their voices in his honor. Delavai, somebody who's Malava, the mess, to the Beis HaChaim, Yelavune, then people will attend his Levaya. Datan, the one who actually carries the Mitta, Yutanune, then other people will eventually carry him. So it's a reciprocal thing. So in other words, the point is that so if the husband now is telling his wife that she shouldn't go to such that she shouldn't go, for example, to be Menachem Oval or friends and family, then she has a justified claim to say that's not right, that eventually it means then I'm going to also eventually go unloved and whatever. A number of different mafoshim over here talk about what exactly was the Gemara's question on v'achayit and a libra. Anyway, I mean, yeah, it means, in other words, a person should keep in mind that sofar demamisa. What exactly is the Gemara bothered by that brings it to this drasha? So one thing that Rif talks about at some length over here, that the fact that it says it starts out by saying the fact that it uses the new word v'achayit and a libra, it should just say v'yitin aliboy. So it's telling us this idea that even when he's alive, he should keep these kinds of things in mind. Eitz Yosef brings something else as well, that after all, the question is, why do we have to say v'achayit in a libo, that a person should do these things because he should keep in mind? Shouldn't a person be doing things from and remembering about that he's eventually going to die? Why should a person? Now, the Gemara tells us in Brachas that if a person is being tormented by his Yetzer Hara, then the last ditch thing is Yazkir lo yom yomisim. Mention to the Yetzer Hara that, you know what, eventually that person has to realize he's going to die, and that's the last resort. The Gemara mentions over there, learn Torah, say Krishma, various other things, and if none of those are working, then mention to him Yom HaMisa and see if that keeps him at bay. So the question would be, why are we saying V'achayit Nalibo, as though that's the main thing? A person should be doing tshuva and doing Maisim Tovim because he loves Hashem, not because of that. So we're saying it's not talking about the Misa itself, we're talking about that he should realize to do these things for the Maisim.
Because something about this.
Yeah.
You're saying that if you had Tzavah, it comes to Yerushalayim the Mita.
Yeah.
So you said over there, tell him about the Mashiach will come. Mashiach will come, will disappear.
Okay.
That's what he said. He said, in me,
Yeah,
doesn't
so the
mean
Yom
that.
HaMitzvah doesn't mean your death, it means his death. Interesting. And it means that the Yetzer Hara is. It means the time of the Yetzer Hara's death. Interesting. Interesting. Very good. Okay. Anyway, okay. So Maharsha also points out, by the way, over here now, it does mention earlier in the Masechta that when it comes to a Simchas Chosin V'Kala, then we say Ma'avirnas HaMes Melifnei Chosin V'Kala, that, for example, we talked about earlier in the Masechta, if you have, let's say, on the road, there's a procession going to bury someone, and there's another procession of a Chosin and Kala, then the Mes gives way to the Chosin and Kala. So that's true. When they meet up there and there's that conflict between them, then you need to do that. But other than that, as the Pasuk is saying, in a way it's better to go to the Beis HaOvel because it makes the person realize these points. Okay. That's what we're saying. Yivduos Hashem b'simcha. But sometimes there's also, that's the point. That was exactly the point that Eitz Yosef is saying. When it comes to doing Torah and mitzvahs, no, it shouldn't be because of fear of missa and because of fear of what's going to happen to you after 120. But when we're saying, in other words, a person might need to motivate himself, why should I bother schlepping out to that levaya? Why should I go and help with the actual kavura or whatever? Realize that the same thing will be done for him eventually.
Selfish.
In a way, but you know what? If that's what it takes to motivate a person, you know, it takes shalei lishma bal lishma, right? Yeah. Okay. The Gemara continues. Then the Gemara continues again with various other things where a husband might want to restrict his wife doing various things. So the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hochi, we learn also in a Braisa, Hamadris Ishto, Tishal, that if he puts his wife under a neder, that she shouldn't lend out, that she shouldn't borrow or she shouldn't lend out various household utensils. Nafa, a sieve, or kvora, a sifter, those are both used for sorting things, but a sieve is you a nofa is used for grain or is used for flour rather. A kvara would be used for coarser things, whatever. Rechayim or millstones, a portable hand mill to grind grain. V'tanur or a portable oven. So he puts his wife under a neder not to lend or borrow any of those things. Yotzi v'yitin ksuba. Then also he can be required by Beis Din to divorce her and pay her ksuba. Mipnei whatever shem rabbi shcheniseha, because he causes her to have a bad name among the neighbors. People are going to think that she's stingy. That's as far as her lending them out. As far as her not borrowing them, some of the Mefarshim point out if she doesn't borrow them, then people are going to think that, you know what, she doesn't want to borrow them because she doesn't want to lend them out either. Tosfos also makes a point, not printed over here in Ein Yaakov, but Tosfos makes a point. He might say, for example, he might not explicitly say, I don't want you to borrow these things, but he might say something like, he might make a neder, if you borrow any of those utensils, I won't eat the food that's prepared using those utensils. And that amounts to saying that you can't borrow them because she's going to be serving him food at home. So therefore, it would impinge on their marriage. And the Braisa continues, V'chein he should nodra, the same way if she makes a neder, Shalei tishov ala shetashol nofok kvoro rechayim v'tanur, the same way if she does the other way around, she makes the neder that she won't borrow or lend out sieves or sifters or mills or ovens, or and a fifth one, V'shalei terek godim noyim levonov, or another one that she won't weave nice clothing for the children. Nowadays you don't have that. You just go to, you go to boutique, or you go on Amazon or whatever, and you order clothes for the kids. But back then, it was a normal thing. Most people wove their own. Most women would weave clothes for their family, and it's an expected thing for her to do. So if she does that kind of thing, teitzah shelo b'ksuba, then she can be divorced without paying her ksuba. The general rule throughout this perek and in various other places in this mesechta and throughout Shas is where the problem in the marriage is her fault, then she forfeits her ksuba as a result of it. And when the problem is because of him, then Beis Din can force him to divorce her, but he has to pay her ksuba. Keep in mind, by the way, all this is before Cherem D'Rabbeinu Gershom, where the husband can divorce his wife without her consent. Since then, you do also need her to consent to receiving the get, otherwise it doesn't work, and then you have the rare case of a heter me'er rabbanim where it doesn't work. Anyway, so the same idea. There you have the other way around. She's giving him a bad name among the neighbors that people are going to think that they're antisocial and stingy. And in the case of the nice clothing, they're going to think, why are his kids not dressed properly? Okay. Further on, it talks about that in general, if the wife is prone to making nedarim, then or rather not so much prone to making nedarim, but prone to breaking her nedarim, then that's also a problem, and that can also be grounds for divorce. Now, in general, throughout the Perek, the Gemara explains that the kind of things that would be grounds for divorce that she does wrong are not, we're not just talking any kind of averus. If, let's say, for example, she breaks Shabbos, that wouldn't necessarily be grounds for divorce. That's not something that directly affects their marriage. But when it's things that do, for example, in various places in the Perek, it talks about, let's say, for example, she serves her husband today for food. She doesn't tell him when she's nida. She dresses or acts unsneistic or whatever. Those kinds of things are grounds for divorce. So now, if she's breaking Nedarim, what does that have to do with the, what does that have to do with the status of their marriage? Why is that any different than breaking Shabbos, let's say? So the answer is because ba'avon Nedarim bonim meisim, because as for the Avera of violating Nedarim, a person's children, Rachmanel Tzlan, can die. We mean particularly young children. The Gemara mentions elsewhere, young children, they're not old enough to have Averas of their own yet, but sometimes they can be the ones who are who die because of their parents' Averas. So Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Al titenes picha lachtias, the Pasuk says, don't allow your mouth to cause your flesh to sin. Your flesh meaning your children as well. The Gomer, and the Pasuk continues, it goes like this, Val malach, don't say in front of the malach that it was a mistake. Loma, the Pasuk continues, Loma yiktsef, the Gemara is not quoting the whole Pasuk over here, Marsha Darshan's various parts of it. Loma yiktsef ele kim al kelecha, why should Hashem be angry at what you said with your voice, v'chibelas masi yadecha, and destroy the work of your hands. So elsewhere, actually, the Gemara explains that the v'chibelas masi yadecha refers to one's children. So in other words, we're saying that if a person spoke with his mouth improperly, said nedarim, and doesn't keep them, then that can cause the work of his hands, namely his children, into whom he put so much effort, may die, rachman. Tosfos discusses, I mean, not Tosfos, Marsha discusses over here that also the Malach and the Pasuk, what does it mean? Does it mean the, it can mean Rashi in Shabbos, where this Gemara is also brought, explains that the Malach of the Pasuk, we know that Malach can mean a messenger, so it means the messenger of Hektish. You made a neder to Hektish, and you're not paying it up, and the Gizbar is coming, the treasurer of Hektish is coming to demand payment from you. So you're going to say, Kishkoga, here was a mistake, I didn't mean to make the neder. So he'll tell you, listen, you know, you made the neder, you got to keep it, unless you're going to be Matir neder. And Marashah says it can also mean the malach means actually a malach, that you're not, don't say, well, it was a mistake that I made, that I violated the neder, because look, you had no business making the neder in the first place.
We do.
Sure, a person wants to be matir neder, of course.
That's
matir the neder, and it's considered as though it never was. True, but as long as you haven't been matir neder, you have to keep it.
So we do it every year.
When we do it, keep in mind that strictly speaking, Hataras Nedarim that we do on Erev Rosh Hashanah is, first of all, in principle, it's only for Nedarim that the person forgot. We actually say, you know, I can't remember, there would be too many to list and I don't remember them. If there's a specific Nedar a person remembers, he actually does have to mention it over there. Besides which also, I mean, strictly speaking, you need a Pesach, you need a Charata. Being Matir Nedar is not quite so simple. Like this, when we do it, I mean, we're not as prone b'chlal to saying nedarim nowadays as they were in the olden days. But so therefore, we do it almost more as a formality. But the fact is, if a person makes a neder, he really does need to go to a beis din and have it properly taken care of. But as long as not, he has to keep it. I mean, one thing also to keep in mind, by Hataras Nedarim, we also make that Tanai. If in the future I make a neder, then I'm making a Tanai in advance that neder is batal. However, one second, that Tanai only works if the person doesn't remember the Tanai at the time. If he remembers, if sometime during the year a person is going to make a neder, and he says, you know I made that Tanai on Erev Rosh Hashanah, but nevertheless, now I'm making a neder, then the Tanai doesn't work for that neder.
What's a neder?
A neder is, a person says, a neder would be, a person says that strictly speaking, a neder would be a person says such and such is also to me. Strictly speaking, a neder is one of two kinds of things. Either the person says that this money or this object or whatever will go to tzedakah or to hektish or whatever is one kind of neder. And the other one, technically a neder, is where he says this item will be also to me. Then you have a shvua, which is very similar, but a shvua is on the person. I will do such and such, or I won't do such and such. Strictly speaking, they are different. There's a number of differences between them in halacha, but many times they're kind of synonymous, which is why we mentioned kol nedarim v'chol shvuos in Hataras Nedarim, and also in kol nidre. Yeah. So these things are not quite so simple.
Okay, the example you gave before, if the wife starts breaking Shabbos, it's a sign that something's wrong with her, or the marriage, or everything.
Of course it shows that something wrong with her.
Yeah,
it may lead to more problems, but right now it's not necessarily grounds for the husband to say that he wants to divorce her. If he wants to, then fine. Listen, I mean, again, before Cherem Deir Ben Negoshim, he can divorce her for whatever reason he wants, but she wouldn't forfeit her ksuba because of it. forfeiting the ksuba is where she's doing something that impinges on the marriage.
At that point, it's not so severe, but you have to look at where it's
yeah,
going.
Okay, that's up to him to decide. But the point is, that's not grounds for him to go to Beis Din and say, you know what, I want to divorce her and she shouldn't collect her ksuba. But if she's acting on sneistic or feeding him today food or various other things, or here we're talking about breaking her nedarim, then those are matters that are grounds not only for divorce, but for her to forfeit her ksuba. Okay, further on, it talks about in a Pisca, a Mishnah, a quotation from the Mishnah, Elu Yotzes Shalei B'Ksuba V'Cholo. There's a list of cases where a woman can be divorced and forfeits her Ksuba, and one of them is Hamakalelis Yoldav B'Fonov. One of them is where she curses his Yoldav, his parents, in his presence. So Omer of Yehuda Omer Shmuel, that it means Bimkalelis Yoldav B'Fnei Melidav. Where she curses Yoldav in front of Melidov. Now there are a couple of different girsois over here. You see over here, there's a footnote that the Rif and the Rosh and the printed Gemara have a girsay. Instead of Yoldav, they have Yelidov, which Hagoyes Hagurah changes to Yoldav, like we have it over here in Ein Yaakov. Yoldav and Melidov. So like this, Yoldav would mean his parents, the ones who bore him, the ones who produced him. Melidov would mean the same thing as well, the ones that produced him. So there are, in fact, Rishonim who learn that way, and they say, for example, that it would include if she curses his grandparents in front of him or in front of his parents. But a different girsa is that the words are Yelidov and Melidov, in which case Yelidov means his children. So it would mean where she's cursing his father in front of his child, or vice versa. So v'simanach. Now the fact is, the Mishnah had said b'fonav, in his presence. So that would only include, for example, if she's cursing his father in her husband's presence. Where do we see that it also includes that if she's cursing his father in front of their son? In front of his son, the simonach, so a simon for you to remember. That is like Yaakov says to Yosef, Ephraim and Manasseh, Keruven v'Shimon Yuli. Ephraim and Manasseh, who are my grandchildren, will be considered to me like Reuven and like Shimon, who are my sons. So we see, in other words, that the next generation. So we see, in other words, that the grandchildren can be considered like the children. So that when the Mishnah says b'fonav, doesn't necessarily mean it has to actually be in his presence. It would be enough if it's in the presence of his children. The Rif and the Rosh, besides that they have the different girsa about Yelidov and Yoldov and whatever, they also have a different girsa as far as what Pasuk the Gemara is bringing. They have a girsa that the Pasuk is the next, that the Pasuk the Gemara is bringing is the next one, Umoylad Dechasha Hilad Tacharehim, where Yaakov says to Yosef, any other children that you have after Ephraim and Manasseh will be considered part of those Shvatim. So then the point is, in other words, that the word Moylad Decha, similar to Moylidov over here, means his children. In short, it doesn't just mean that she curses his father in front of him or his parents in front of him. It would be also if she does it in front of his children, because again, we're saying that the children are considered grandchildren of the grandfather, which is to say her husband's children are considered like their own children. That would also be a case, therefore, where it's grounds for divorce and for her to forfeit the ksuba. An interesting point in it that's brought is the Noisa Kalim on Shulchan Aruch, the Pischa Chova actually discusses over there, that doesn't mean necessarily that she has to curse them with Hashem's name. We know, for example, when it comes to the din, that when a person curses Hashem, then he's Chayav Misa only if he curses using a name of Hashem. Would the same thing apply over here? The Pischa Chova discusses, maybe, on the other hand, though, he says, the Gemara brings an example of a curse where she says, for example, May a lion eat your father up in front of your son. So then in the face of it, doesn't involve Hashem's name. But then he says, you know what, you find that sometimes a lion is used as a metaphor for Hashem. So maybe it is. Maybe the Gemara means to say that she's using Hashem's name and the Gemara is just using a euphemism. Further on in the Perek, the Gemara deals with various other things where that can be grounds for divorce. There we're talking not so much things that she did wrong, but rather certain physical defects of hers. So then the Gemara brings a statement by Rabbi Meyashia, the grandson of Rabbi Yeshua, ben Levi, in that about a particular din in that. So then, as the Gemara often does, it digresses to bring another statement from the same Amora as well. The pasuk says, "Ulatzian ye Omar tetzian." It will be said, "Ish ve'ish yulad ba." Man and man was born in it. V'hu yechonenah elyon, and Hashem, the Most High, will establish tzian firmly. So what does that pasuk mean? Now, the simple meaning of the pasuk, Mefoshim on the pasuk, discuss a couple of possibilities. Rashi on the pasuk mentions over there two possibilities. One is that it means that like this, Limos Mashiach, we know all the Jewish people are going to be gathered from all over the world, wherever they are. Va'atim to look to La'achad Echad B'nei Yisrael, and the Psukim describe in Yishaya and in other places that you even have the Goyim are going to bring all the Jews who are stuck in their countries are going to bring them to Eretz Yisrael to Yerushalayim. Ve'vios Kalachecha Mincha and other similar Psukim. Agav, you have an explanation on that. I don't remember from who that says you see from that very clearly that even the most assimilated Yidden, think of it, when Mashiach comes and he's blowing his trefoil, you don't think everybody's going to come running automatically? Nevertheless, we're still saying there are people who are saying the goyim are going to have to bring them, and nevertheless, they're going to be brought and they're still going to be part of the Jewish people. Anyway. So Rashi's first explanation is it means that everywhere in the world, people are going to say, hey, you know, there's a Yid. Ish, this person was born in Tzion. This person belongs to the Jewish people. We need to bring him back to join the rest of the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. The second explanation Rashi says over there is it means, like in nowadays, we might say, this person is very important. He's an American, or he's a Frenchman, or whatever. And when Mashiach comes, that kind of thing is going to be said, wow, he's so important. He's a Yid. He's a Yerushalmi. So the Gemara gives a, and then the Radak points out another explanation on it. It's important. It's good to know the meaning of it, the words of that kapitel. After all, we say it on Shabbos and Yom Tov and every day when there's no Tachlon. We say it before benching. It's good to know the meaning of it. The Radak, anyway, gives another explanation. He says, with other nations you might have, like you have in the previous pasuk, Azkir Rahavu Vavel, I'll mention the various nations over there, and then we'll say this person was born there. Meaning you look at each of those nations, you'll find, let's say, there's one particular person who's very distinguished who comes from that nation, as opposed to Letzia. And when it comes to the Jewish people, Ya'oma Ish V'Ish Yuladbar, we can give a list upon a list upon a list of many prominent, important people who are from the Jewish people. So Omer of Meyashia, Bab Redir, Rabbi Levi, why Ish V'Ish, why the double expression? Echad Anolad Ba, it means both a person who was born in Eretz Yisrael, in Tzion, the Echad Hamatzapi L'Roisa, and one who looks forward to seeing it. So in other words, so besides the three pshatim which we said so far, and yeah, Rashi brings the first explanation that I said over here, that Rashi brings on the pasuk over there, he brings on the Gemara here as well, that it means that all the Jews will be gathered from all over the world. And we mean what kind of Jews? We mean both the ones who are actually born in Eretz Yisrael and the ones who look forward to seeing Eretz Yisrael. So both of them are ish v'ish. Each of them is considered somebody who was born in Zion. So Marsha explains like this. In other words, again, so you have the different countries all. You talk about this person is from here, meaning that he was born there. But here we're saying with a Yid, even if he wasn't born in Eretz Yisrael, he's still a citizen of Eretz Yisrael because Mitzapi L'Roisa, because Vahu Yechonineha Elyon, because he knows Hashem will reestablish it and he's looking forward to it. Thus, also the pasuk continues. Hashem Yisper B'Chsoiv Amim, Hashem is going to write, Hashem is going to count in the writing of the nations. So you have, in other words, that you have the various nations. You have there are Jews who are born there among those goyim, and it's going to be written down. So the goyim, it'll be written that they're born there. But a yid is not going to be written that he was born in that other country. It's going to be written that he was born in Zion because that's really where he belongs. There is, in fact, a story in that connection involving, I think, Rabbi Chaim Sonnenfeld, the Rav of Yerushalayim in the 1920s and 30s. There was a Yid who wanted to immigrate to Eretz Yisrael, but the Goyish government of that time, the Turks or the British, whoever it was giving him a hard time of it. But if he could bring an affidavit that he was born in Eretz Yisrael, then it would make it a lot easier. So can he write such an affidavit, even though he was actually born in Poland or whatever it is? Rabbi Chaim told him yes, based on this Gemara. He wasn't physically born in Eretz Yisrael, but he's Tzapi L'Roisa, and therefore, yes, he is a citizen of Eretz Yisrael.
So
all of us, in other words, are Tzapi. Now, an interesting thing, though, actually, on the side over here of the Ein Yaakov, you have a pirush called Ge'on Yaakov, which is collected from various earlier Sfarim. A lot of the explanations, and it's too bad I don't comment on things from it more often. There are a lot of beautiful things in there, but a lot of times they're printed out of place because there's so little room on the margin that the things stretch out to another page. But he brings, like this. We're saying mitzapilaroisa. Now, you know, you have the famous thing that the Gemara says, kola, that anybody who mourns over Yerushalayim, zoicha v'roya b'nechama, he's going to have the schus to see the greatness of Yerushalayim lo'asid lavai. So if we're saying over here, all of us are mitzapilaroisa, and all of us therefore are considered citizens of Tzion, then how come, how you have generations upon generations of Jews were mitzapilaroisa, and they didn't get to see the gola mitzvah v'ashleima? He says, because you know, when you're saying kolam is abal al Yerushalayim, he says there could be two kinds of avelos. Let's consider, for example, let's take, for example, you know, the recent events. You have those fires in California. You might have, you know, we're living here in New York. We know people who live over there. We know. We have relatives. We have friends or whatever who live over there. We krechts over it. We see, you know, we contribute to tzedakah campaigns for them. We don't feel it so intensely to ourselves because it wasn't our house. Mashen, can you imagine? You have a yid over there who taka his whole house and everything is gone. He feels it a lot more keenly. So Goyin Yaakov brings over here on the side. That's the kind, when we say kolam isabel av Yerushalayim zeicha v'roya b'simchasa, when we're talking about over here somebody who's really a citizen of Yerushalayim, that's the kind we're talking about, where he really feels the churban as a keen thing, as a personal thing, as though Pashat, his own house was destroyed right now, where not all of us think that way about the Beis Hamikdash. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Abaye says you should know there is still the fact is the Jews who are from Eretz Yisrael have a greater advantage. Ish versus ish, but still v'chad minayu, one Jew from Eretz Yisrael, one Talmud Chacham from Eretz Yisrael, odif kitnei minan, is as great in knowledge of Torah as two of us from Bavel. Because avira de Eretz Yisrael machkin, because the heir of Eretz Yisrael makes them wise. Omar Rava, Chad Minan, and Rava says further, when one of us, Kisolik Lahasim, if a Yid from Bavel, if a Talmud Chacham from Bavel moves to Eretz Yisrael, Kisolik Lahasim, when he goes up there to Eretz Yisrael, Odif Ketrei Minayu, he winds up being twice as great as the native people of Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, four times as great as he was in Bavel. Dehor Reb Yumiyah, as we have the example of Reb Yumiyah, Ki Hava Hocha, when he lived here in Bavel, Lo Hava Yodah, my Kamri Rabbanon. He didn't even know really what the Chachamim are saying. He was in the Beis Medrash, he's learning Torah, but he really didn't understand it fully. You even have, there's a Madura Kama of Rashi that's brought in a number of places in Shittim Ukubetzes on Arma Sechta, and in that Madura Kama, Rashi says, you know, you have a story in Bava Basra where Reb Yumiyah was actually kicked out of the Beis Medrash for a while for asking a question which the other Chachamim didn't approve of. So we see that in Bavel, he was a shtickle Talmud Chacham, but he didn't amount to very much. Ki solik lahosam, but then Reb Yumiyah moved to Eretz Yisrael, and he became such an enormous Talmud Chacham, korilan bavloi tipshoi, that on the contrary, he calls us, as you find in a few places in Chas, the foolish Babylonians, meaning that he became so much greater, even that you see now, the other Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael don't talk that way, because they're not as great, relatively speaking. They're twice as great as the Chachamim of Bavel, but not four times as great. But meanwhile, Reb Yumiyah now is four times as great as the Chachamim of Bavel, because he has the advantage of the Bavel, and he has the advantage of having moved to Eretz Yisrael and all of that, and therefore he winds up much, much greater than he otherwise would have been. It was actually Marshall refers over here to comments of his on a relevant Gemara in Sanhedrin, which was actually just a couple of days ago in Daf Yomi, where the Gemara compares and contrasts the style of learning of the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael and above all. In Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara mentions they were much more noichin zelazeh, they were calm with one another in halacha. They asked questions and they gave answers, but they were in Bavel, it was much more like almost like the Gemara calls it almost destructive, choivlim, like I have to show that you're wrong. I'm gonna jump down your throat, kind of, and show that you're wrong, and which is what the Gemara is all about. You have it all the time that somebody asks something, and you have five different people are jumping on him and asking. I have a stira from a Mishnah and a Braisa and or whatever. So in Bavel, then they have that sharpness that they don't have in Eretz Yisrael. But then therefore, when he comes to Eretz Yisrael, and on top of that, then he brings that sharpness. Plus, he has the avidah de Eretz Yisrael machkim. Then it makes him so much greater than he otherwise was.
California right now is having those fires. One simple reason, in my opinion.
Let's not get into one simple reason for your opinion, because Shloima, you're not the Edishter, you're not a Navi, you're not even a Rav Manik Bistro. Don't start giving reasons to excuse to say why the Edishter does things.
The Jewish people, yeah.
When they go to Eretz Yisrael, yeah, they become so much greater. Yeah, that's the idea. That's what we're saying. Anaf Yosef points out another point as well, is also that they have the advantage that they're partial the fact that they're The moving, actually, that's Ion Yaakov rather says, the fact that they have to move, that they move to a place of Torah, have a goel makom Torah, that itself is a milah that makes them so much greater. Yeah.
This point on the davening in the oil, but in a way, it's I am a drager from this soil.
The Rebbe talked about, yeah, that the oil has a madriga of Eretz Yisrael, because eventually when Mashiach comes, when Tchias HaMeisim comes, there'll be going to be mechilos, there's going to be
No,
the.
since davening in the oil, since doesn't have the kpeda on Eretz Yisrael, so it's you davening in the chutz la'aretz,
Yeah, the Rebbe
it's
explains that
connected to Eretz
the
Yisrael
Rebbe explains the
in
reason why it's
a
connected is
way.
based on, we're going to learn later in the Masechta about the mechilos, about the tunnels that are going to be for the Mesim to go from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, and therefore it's considered as though even now they're open.
So meaning, once we dive in here, it's the highest madriga
Yeah.
for
I mean,
davening.
the Rebbe also talked about the idea that shuls and chutz la'aretz, eventually we know they're all going to come to Eretz Yisrael as well, and they're going to be joined to the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, shul, even in chutz la'aretz now, has a certain semblance of the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. Further on, at the end of the perek, it starts talking about, now we said what happens if the wife has mumim. Now what about if the husband has mumim? So in general, those are not necessarily grounds for divorce. However, a Mishnah mentions that there is one particular illness that if the husband has it, then it is grounds for divorce, and it's called mukashchin. Shchin on the face of it means boils, like we have by one of the makas. In Gemara terminology, it seems that shchin means any of a wide variety of different things that have that have the that, that you can see on the skin, and some of them affect other parts of the body as well. In particular, it seems from some descriptions in some places in the Gemara that shchin also includes what's called leprosy, which is not the same as tzaras, but it's a disease that if it's not treated, nowadays they have treatments for it, but in the olden times it could actually cause a person's body parts to wither and fall off. So the Gemara explains, the Mishnah explains, and the Gemara expands on it, that a person with Shechin, then Tashmish makes his condition even worse, and therefore that would be, therefore it's best that he divorces his wife so that his health doesn't get even worse. So the Gemara gives in this connection, Tanya Omer Rabbi Yossi, Sochli Zoken Echad Me'anshi Yerushalayim, an old man from the people of Yerushalayim told me the following, Esrim Ba'abo Mukesh Shechin Hein, there are 24 types of Mukesh Shechin, 24 diseases that all go under the general term of Mukesh Shechin, V'chol and Omer Chacham Tashmish Kosher Lahen, all of them, the Chacham say that Tashmish is harmful for them, or Bale Rasan Kosher Mikolon, the worst of all of them, of all those 24, is Rasan, as the Gemara is going to explain, as we're going to see soon from the description of the Gemara, what Rasan is.
That's what Pharaoh got, right?
So Marsha brings from a medrash that, yeah, when Paroi kidnapped Sarah, he was punished with Rasan, because it says Negoyim Gedolim, and that's the greatest of all the Mukesh Shchin. Yeah, in particular, because also it means that Tashmish is bad for him, that would also cause him to keep his hands off Sarah. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Mimai Havi, what does a person get Rasan from in the first place? D'Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Hik is dam v'shimish. If a person lets blood, which makes him feel weaker, v'shimish, and then right away after that he has relations, Havian loy bonim v'sikin, then the result is his children are going to be weak. If both the husband and wife let blood, and then they have relations, Havian loy bonim bale Rasan, then they have children who are susceptible to Rasan. Omer HaPapa, however, the Papa says, that would only apply if after they let the blood, before they had relations, if they didn't eat something. I will toy midi, but if they eat something, like we do nowadays, like people do nowadays, after they give blood, less one bar, then there's no problem. It won't cause the children to be weak or to suffer from Rasan. As we're going to see in the continuation of the discussion in the Gemara, basically the cause of Rasan is that the person has an insect that lodges in his brain, and the Gemara is going to show how to cure him of it. But the result is it has a lot of physical symptoms. Among them is a skin condition, which is why it's called one of the Mukesh Shchin, but it has other symptoms as well, as the Gemara is going to go on to say.
Giving blood.
No, I'm saying in the times of the Gemara, Makis Dam was to let blood, means it was a medical treatment that they would do every so often. There was a medical idea then and for hundreds of years later that sometimes too much blood in your body is bad for you, and therefore you have to let a certain amount of it out. Nowadays, there's certain rare medical conditions that also require it, but in general, I'm saying the modern equivalent as far as having blood let out of your body would be, for example, when you're giving blood. But the same idea you always see whenever Hatzalah or anybody has places for letting blood, then afterwards they have bagels and orange juice or whatever, because as Gemara says here and in other places, it's important to eat right afterwards to help regain your strength. So the Gemara says, "My simone, what are the symptoms of a person with Rasan? Dolfan ene, his eyes are always tearing and watering. V'dayvin, his nostrils, his nose is always running. Saliva, drool is always dripping from his mouth. Didve, and flies are always following him. Okay. Umay asvase, how do we cure him? Abaya says you have to make the following. You start by making the following concoction. Pila, you take pila, which Rashi's French translation is a plant that's called an English pennyroyal. It's related to mint. So you start with that. Veludna and wormwood, which is a bitter herb. Goiza, the next ingredient is the bark of a walnut tree. The girda de ashpa, the next one after that is the scrapings from a skin, from an animal skin. When you're preparing it to turn into leather, you scrape off things from it. So that's the next thing. Klilmalka. The next thing is klilmalka, which is a lily. And the last ingredient, maschala de dikla sumka, the shell, like the shell or the container in which a red date grows. When dates are young on the tree, they grow inside a kind of soft shell. So that thing is what the Gemara is calling over here maschala. So you take all those ingredients together, you boil them up all together to make a kind of soup. The next thing, you take the person who's suffering from Nasan and bring it into a marble building. Marble is airproof, is airtight, so that way no drafts from the outside will get in while you're doing the following operation that the Gemara is going to describe. Throughout Shas, it's always a commonplace thing that drafts, that the that that even the small even the slightest breeze can make a person's sickness worse, and that in particular, when you're doing surgery on a person, you need to have a place where breezes and things can't get in. So a Beis HaDeshisha, a marble house, would be like the equivalent of an operating room nowadays. The Ila Ika Beis HaDeshisha. If you can't find a marble building, Ma'ayla the Beis HaDeshev Livni Va'aricha. Then instead, bring him into a building whose walls are made out of 7 bricks plus a half a brick. The standard bricks in the times of Shas were 3 by 3 tefachim. Tefach being between 3 and 4 inches, according to the different poskim. So you're talking these bricks are around 10 inches square, give or take. So you have the walls of the building have to be made out of at least 7.5 such bricks placed next to each other. So you're talking about a building with walls of like 6 to 8 feet thick, approximately. Same idea. In other words, that this way drafts won't get in. The next thing you do, v'notele tlas me'akasi al reshe, pour 300 cups of this concoction on the guy's head. Often in the Gemara, 300 doesn't mean literally 300, but it means you pour a very large amount of it. Ad de rafya ise de moiche, until eventually his skull softens, and now it'll be easier to cut open, which is the next stage of the operation. At that point, you cut open his skull and you expose his brain. Now, umaisi arba taufi de osa. Now, the next thing you do, you take 4 hadas leaves, umadli kochad kara. You grab the bug over there that's in his brain that's causing all the symptoms of Rasan. You pick up one leg at a time, umoisiv chad, and then you put it down on top of the leaf. And then once all 4 legs are on the leaves, then you'll be able to take it off safely. The shokob tzavsa, at that point, you take it off with tweezers. The point why you have to do that way, it actually explains, is otherwise, if you just start lifting off the bug directly, it's going to dig its feet into the brain. And then when you try to pull it off, you're going to pull out some of the brain tissue with it. And the guy's not going to be any better off then. So you have to do this method in order to make sure that you can get it out safely without injuring the brain.
This is the Rambam secret?
I mean, this is right here in the Gemara. Yeah. So you put each leaf, so you pick up one leg at a time of the bug and put a leaf underneath it. And then when you're done, then you have all 4 legs on top of the leaves. Now you can pick up the bug with the tweezers and again get it out of there. The kolile, and you have to burn the bug. The eloi, because if not, hodu ilave, it's going to come back and attack the guy again. So this is the process how to cure somebody from Rasan. But as long as you can't, then as we're saying, and then he's going to have those symptoms that we said before, and therefore he can be dangerous. There is a very, very interesting thing, and now we'll learn more about him tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, about Baalei Rasan. There is a very interesting idea that the Kli Yoko brings in at the beginning of Parshas Metsora. He says the Baal Rasan of Or Gemara over here is a metaphor for a person who's over the whole all the symptoms that we're mentioning over here is a metaphor for a Baal Lashon Hara. He says here we mentioned that flies are always following him, and the next piece of Gemara is mentioning that the flies carry the germs of the disease and are very dangerous to others. So he says the same way, for example, you look at a fly never goes for healthy skin. It always goes for, there's a wound, there's something smelly, disgusting, whatever, a fly always goes for that. That's what a Baal Lashon Hara is like. He's always looking for, there's good things about somebody, never mind those. Let's find the juicy, bad, the horrible stuff about him and spread that as far as possible. So that's the Gemara is going to say in the next piece, be careful even of the flies of such a person, be careful, don't be anywhere near Bali. He says also Rasa in itself is Meloshon Ra, because this person always makes a point of looking out for the bad in other people. So the Gemara is saying to stay away from such people, which we'll learn more about that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Okay.
There's a fly, that means somebody's talking about Shalom.
No, so not necessarily every time you see a fly, it means somebody's speaking Lashon Hara, but the point is that flies are a metaphor for a Baal Lashon Hara. All right. We know the famous Mishnah. We know the famous Mishnah that we have in the Haggadah, also Kol Yemei Chayecha Lahavi L'Moshe Mashiach, where the famous drasha on it is that the whole purpose of a Yid's life throughout his life should be Lahavi L'Moshe Mashiach, and especially the Rebbe was talking about that. It's important to stress that in our times, in our times. Kol Yemei Chayecha means exactly that. Every moment a person is alive, day or night, awake or asleep, at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, he's still breathing the air. And we know, as the Gemara says, I'll call neshima v'neshima, for every breath that a person takes, he ought to be praising Hashem. So therefore, breathing is something that happened that has 24/7, unlike eating and drinking, for example. So it means kol yemei chayecha, every moment of where he has new chayus from a new breath has to be involved with the havili moshe mashiach, not just when he's thinking and doing things pa'ulis to bring mashiach, but his chayus itself should be for the purpose of the havili moshe mashiach. Okay, continuing on halachas of Shabbos. So we talked about yesterday about how you're allowed to think of your business on Shabbos, but even though it's better you shouldn't, you should think happy thoughts on Shabbos, but you're not allowed to speak about it. Now, for example, you could say to somebody, do you think you'll be able to be with me this evening? Now, the guy understands that it means you want to hire him for a job, but you're not actually saying outright that you want him to hire for him for a job, so that would be mutter. Don't say, be ready for me this evening, because that's more saying like you want to actually hire him. But if you're saying, do you think you'll be able to be available this evening, then that would be fine, because that's not openly saying that you want him for a job. See?